ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Bhagavatam Canto 7, Chapter 3, Text 11. Hiranyakashipu's plan to become immortal. Who's the best Sanskritist? You can chant.
Ketam vitaseham Yatha purav ojasa Kimanye kala nidyutai Pante vaishnavadipi.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. By dint of my severe austerities, I shall reverse the results of pious and impious activities. I shall overturn all the established practices within this world. Even Rupa Loka will be vanquished at the end of the millennium. Therefore, what is the use of it? I shall prefer to remain in the position of Brahma. Hiranyakashipu's demoniac determination was explained to Lord Brahma by the demigods, who informed him that Hiranyakashipu wanted to overturn all the established principles. After executing severe austerities, people within this material world are promoted to the heavenly planets. But Hiranyakashipu wanted them to be unhappy, suffering because of the diplomatic feelings of the demigods, even in the heavenly planets. He wanted those who were harassed in this world by material transactions to be unhappy for the same reason, even in the heavenly planets. Indeed, he wanted to introduce such harassment everywhere. One might ask how this would be possible, since the universal order has been established since time immemorial. But Hiranyakashipu was proud to declare that he would be able to do everything by his power, by his tapasya. He even wanted to make the Vaishnava's position insecure. These are some of the symptoms of asuric determination. Hiranyakashipu is the devotee's favorite demon. We like Hiranyakashipu because he's such a good demon. Clear. No ambiguity. And he attacked Prahlad Maharaj, a little child. What kind of a person does that? Wants to get rid of a little child. So he's brilliant. And Hiranyakashipu, his name, wealth and comfort, comfortable living. So we despise that. So we despise Hiranyakashipu. But sometimes it's not as easy as that. Hiranyakashipu, he has, as Prabhupada says, a very nice phrase, demoniac determination. He's convinced that he can do this thing by the power of his own austerity. And he's actually come to the point now in the story where he's become so powerful that the demigods have had to leave their abode and go to Brahma and say, we have a problem and you need to come and sort it out. So that's a serious problem when we have to go to Brahma. Normally you can go to your temple president or your parents, or, you know, there's always someone within this world that you can discuss it with. But not in this case. Hiranyakashipu was a powerful person and he knew it. And his determination was to become Brahma. So when Dhruva Loka passes away, when this earth passes away at the dissolution of the material universe, Tapaloka, Brahma's planet, is not dissolved at that time. So he's figuring how to remain immortal for as long as possible. By my austerity. I'm not dependent on anyone else. I'm dependent on me alone. Therefore, no one can disturb my comfort. So when he has his goal and his comfort, he decides when he enjoys. Nobody else. So that's certainly pride. But as I said, he has something to be proud about. Maybe more than we have. He was a powerful person. And he knew how to use that power intelligently. he performed tapasyas, and people ignored him initially, thought he was a crank. He's just on some kind of a trip. He's off doing austerities for some, just another Baba. But actually, he wasn't. He had a very good plan, very intelligent plan, to perform enough austerities so he would attract the attention of Brahma himself. It's working. So far, so good. So, very intelligent. The only difficulty he had was his demoniac determination. Not his determination. The fact that it was demoniac. The fact that he was, as Prabhupada says, proud to declare that he would be able to do everything by the power of his tapasya. That it's by his power that he was going to make it. And this is the fundamental flaw. Just a little chink, really, considering all that he's able to do. And in a sense, we're all so proud to declare that we're able to do it, whatever it is we're doing. And our attachment to wealth and comfort is even in the ashram. Everyone in this world, we don't take birth to become gentlemen and ladies. We take birth to enjoy. And that's all that Hiranyakashipu did. He just had more facility than we had. He had more determination. He had more power. Given the same power, what would we do? Would we do this as well? So we've been crushed a little bit. Someone gave us some, made us look small. So we turned to Krishna. Help! But at what point do we really become that devotee of Krishna? I mean, the most dangerous thing we can do in the material world is stand before Krishna and ask to become his servant. It's the most dangerous thing you can do materially. Because Krishna will take it seriously. And he gives us more credit than is really in our heart. We come before Krishna and say, Krishna, smash my false ego so that I can become your devotee. But unfortunately, that's exactly what Krishna does. And that is the end of our material life. We can never be comfortable again. We can never enjoy wealth again. So, there's a warning. Once when, the first time I came to India, there's about 20 of us from Ireland. We came in a group. And the first time we were going to bathe in the Yamuna, we were all standing, putting on our gumshas. And this old gentleman came and he was watching. And we didn't put much past on him. And he was saying, so, you are going to bathe in Yamuna? And we were going, yes, yes, we're going to bathe in the Yamuna. And he says, ha, Yamuna is like Ganga. Ganga. You bathe in the Yamuna and all your sins gone. And we were going, yes, yes, we're going to bathe in the Yamuna, all our sins will be gone, yes, yes. We weren't taking much notice. He said, and Yamuna is not like Ganga because all your pious activities also gone. And all of a sudden I noticed 20 people slowing down. We all had to think about that for a minute. Because the fact is, the heavenly delights, as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, are very attractive to us. This material world is an attractive place. The particular manifestation we have around us here in Mumbai may be not as immediately attractive, but the thought of the heavenly planets, where everyone is beautiful, everyone is young, there's no inconvenience. Sex life is not a sin. Somaras is available to everyone. That's high class intoxication. That's for everyone to have and everyone to enjoy. You're nearly forced to enjoy. And why do you get that reward? Because you did something. You worked hard and you get a good result. And that makes you feel, I worked hard, I got a good result. That's all Hiranyakashipu is doing. He's just taking it to an extreme. So, as an extremist, we look at him and we laugh. Ha ha ha, what a funny fellow. But actually, we reflect it. Again, given the same facility, what would we do? how deep is our devotion, how deep is our attachment to Krishna over our attachment to comfort. Maybe we don't have access to comfort. It doesn't mean the attachment isn't there. And the anartha that Hiranyakashipu is displaying is in all our hearts. That's why we're here. We don't get born to become pure devotees. That's very rare. So Hiranyakashipu is he's our friend. He's helping us understand something. In that sense, he's our guru. We can understand that this fellow, with such determination, if we even use a fraction of his determination in Krishna consciousness, we have a chance to attract Krishna's attention. That would be wonderful. So he's a very qualified person, and in that sense, he gets our credit. Anyone who's qualified gets our credit. In the Bhagavatam in 4.8.34, Prabhupada discusses how to act in the material world in such a way that you don't commit offense and that you become happy. And the first thing is you give credit where it's due. This phenomena is reflected even more pointedly in the verse Trinada Pi Sunichina. So Amanida Medanina, that we don't expect any honor for ourselves, but we're willing to give all honor and all respect to others. So someone drives by in their big new Mercedes car with their arm out the window and a smile on their face, and what's our response? This is the test. Is our response, oh, look at this guy, he'll have this car for some short time and then he'll be suffering, ha 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 ha. Or is going by, we're saying, oh, the karmi, he's so attached. That's not a generous response. Krishna has given him that car because of his karma. Maybe he'll lose it, maybe he won't lose it. That's not our business. Krishna's given him the car, give him the credit. Congratulations on your car, sir. He deserves the credit. The Queen of England deserves the credit. Why? She's got the karma. She becomes the queen. No point sitting there being proud. Sometime maybe I'll be the queen. Sometimes I'll be the king. That's when we're proud. When we think there's the possibility that we can enjoy, or we can have the position, or we can have the car, then we become envious of the other person. The only way we can get over that envy is to deal with our own pride. And that this text, Trinada Pi Sunichina, is exactly giving us the hint. The wonderful story of Sanatana Rupa Goswami, when the Pandit came, and he wanted to argue with them, and they refused to argue with him. They said, what do you want us to sign? So that they signed away their reputation, so that he could go and say that they had been defeated. They didn't even bother arguing. They just gave him, what do you want? He wants reputation. He wants honor. He wants respect. So rather than waste their time when they could be chanting Hare Krishna, they just gave it to him. Amanena Madanena. That's a difficult thing to do. Someone comes looking for respect and they want to argue with us, some Mayavadi or I don't know who, is someone. Our tendency is to argue with them, not to give them the respect specifically. Why? Because they want it. So they shouldn't get it. Actually, there's another consideration. And this is what Rupa and Sanatana did. This is the practice of Trinada Pi Sunichina. This is the practice of Vaishnavism. And it's not easy to practice because our tendency is to compete in the material world. If someone has more than us, we compete with them. We don't respect them. We don't give it to them. Let them have it. Let them take it. Let them take the honor, the respect, the dignity, the position. We actually, something in our heart is saying, maybe someday I'll also have an opportunity, just a little opportunity for a little comfort. You know, a mobile phone, a laptop, a car, my own. It's there. These aren't big desires, but things start small. So Hiranyakashipu, he had big desires, big plans. And he was so proud and so determined that he's come to our attention. Thousands of years later, we're still discussing his case In one sense, he gained the immortality. We're still discussing Hiranyakashipu. That's quite powerful. He's become the benchmark of something. We're the benchmark of nothing. We won't be remembered. So this determination pays dividends. If only we can use Surik, not Asurik, determination. But to do that, that's to be very powerful. That's to be really strong, really courageous. We can think that Hiranyakashipu is very cool and very courageous, powerful person, strong man. Actually, the strong man is the humble person. The only reason why is because you can't artificially be humble. It takes actual strength. You have to know exactly what you're giving up to be humble. It's a position of honesty. If we can somehow be honest with ourselves, realizing our position in this world, realizing, confronting, facing our pride, which is our real weakness. This is Hiranyakashipu's weakness, is his pride. His only weakness, factually. If we can find our pride, see it for ourselves, it's very difficult to be honest with ourselves about that. Very easy to be honest with everybody else about their pride. Pointing, you know, to look at someone and say, oh, I know what his problem is. There's a Scottish poet called Robbie Burns, very famous, and he wrote it's in kind of English and Scottish language a bit. It's a poem and it says, I pray to God the power to gie us to see ourselves as others see us. It means I pray to God to give us the power to see ourselves as other people see us. Because I can look at you and say, oh, I know how to fix you. Your problem is 1, 2, 3. It's very easy. But I don't see it in myself. In myself, I mean, the classic example, you go to the astrologer. Someone in the street is trying to look for bakshish. So he's going to tell you some astrology and he tells you some nice thing about yourself. And we're all ears. When someone says something nice, something flattering, that's who we are. That's what we want to believe. But who are we really? What is our position? Krishna Das Kaviraj gives us the wonderful verse where he discusses with us his position, intimately shares his thought about himself. It's very extreme that he is a worm in the stool. That's as extreme as you're going to get. But I suggest that Krishna Das Kaviraj was realizing in his honesty that as soon as we get born in this world, we're in a very dangerous position, very precarious. We can be dragged away by any form of Maya. Anything can become alluring to us. You see people who live their lives blamelessly and then all of a sudden something strikes them. Or comes out of nowhere. And then they do something wrong. People kill people having led a non-violent life and all of a sudden in a fit of rage, of passion, within seconds, pick up a knife, and then immediately regret it. It's like it happens in a moment. Such things happen all the time. The big thing, child abuse. We look at that and we go, oh, that's so horrible. No, we wouldn't do that. How do you think the people who do that, do you think they sit down and say, when I grow up, I want to be a child abuser? That's not what they think. They end up like that. The modes of nature, we make choices according to the modes and we end up in a situation because of weakness. And any one of us can be weak. To be strong like this in spiritual life, like Hiranyakashipu is betraying material strength, to be strong spiritually, that's something we have to depend on Krishna for, on the association of devotees. But while we're in the association of devotees, when we come in the door, we bring a big package with us on our back. And we try and get as much in as possible. So the door of the temple is so big, and the package is bigger. Because we've been carrying it around life after life. Little attachments we've been picking up in this life, and we put it into our pack. Oh, I'll come back to that. That's an interesting one. And we're carrying our big pack. And we come into the temple. Oh, I'll become a pure devotee. Whew, then people will praise me. That'll be good. So we try and get in the temple with our pack. And some of it has to go. So we take out as much as we can to get in the door. But I suggest we also take something with us. And as we go through Krishna consciousness, the idea of what it means to be a pure devotee changes radically. If it doesn't, we're not advancing. When we walk in the door, we don't really know what Krishna consciousness is. We have some vague idea. It's some piety has drawn us there. Some devotee has touched us in some way that we have some faith. This is a good thing. But we don't really realize what purity means, the kind of surrender necessary. Hiranyakashipu had no desire for such surrender, so he's in an extreme position. But also, we don't have a developed desire. That process has only begun with us. So while we're in the temple, we have our little pack, and it's in a corner somewhere. And after Mangal Arti and puja and class and prasadam, we go up to our room and we're looking at our little pack and make sure everything's okay. Everything's there, just in case. We might need it later on. We have to be very careful about cultivating material desire, because we've been cultivating it consistently life after life. That's our culture. And somehow we have to break that culture and begin to culture Krishna consciousness and make that the essence of life. And that's the whole practice. In this temple, you're very blessed that your Guru Maharaj has developed this culture of sadhana as the center of everything. That's the answer, without doubt. It doesn't matter who we are, we have to do the fundamental practices of Krishna consciousness, because those simple practices are the things that are going to give us the spiritual strength to reflect honestly about ourselves, to understand who we really are. What a difficult position we're in this world, and how attached we are, and how much we need Krishna. How totally dependent we are on Him for any advancement in spiritual life. We have no hope otherwise. And Hiranyakashipu's example to us, his pride that he doesn't want to talk to anyone about this. He doesn't want to talk to anyone about himself. He doesn't want to reflect about himself. He doesn't want to hear anyone's opinion unless it says he's brilliant. We have this nature also. And we have to open up so that our spiritual teachers, essentially Krishna, through our Guru, through the Vaishnavas, can send us little messages, can help us understand our actual position. And these messages, they're constantly there. Every second is an opportunity to learn something about ourselves, if we have the aptitude, if we have the heart, if we have the desire. But we have to be able to take the opportunity. And that's the real difficulty. Because with our attachment to the material world, no matter how much it's kept in the bag, it's there. And with our meditation on that attachment, it keeps us from progressing, from wanting to reflect. Because if we reflect deeply, we have to admit that we're rascals and we need to be chastened. We need to be told our real position, and it's not going to be pretty, and we're not going to like it. And that's difficult for any of us to take, any of us to swallow. So Hiranyakashipu, I suggest, he's the devotee's favorite demon, but he's also one of our good teachers. Because if we continue in our pride, we won't advance. We'll be stuck, like Hiranyakashipu is stuck. And he came to a bad end. And all of us in pride will come to a bad end. And I say this from some realization. If any of us are to be honest, we have pride, and that pride has made us make mistakes. And we've hung on to our pride even in situations where it's obvious that we're foolish. And that's when we started to commit offense. In fact, I was just talking to Radhanath Swami 2 days ago about this very point. So it's fortuitous it comes up in the text. The one thing that's going to keep us from Krishna consciousness is making offense. And the root cause is pride. And it's very difficult not to think of ourselves as good, not to think of ourselves as accomplished, not to think of ourselves as intelligent, as pure. And these anarthas, they're very strong. It's very easy for someone to make a decision based on pride, and once they make the decision, it's very difficult to change it, even if you see it leading to catastrophe. It's very difficult once we've decided from the ego perspective that I am going to do this thing, or I am this kind of person, or I am qualified to do this. If you give a person a position in this world, very difficult to extricate them from the position if they're not qualified. That's our ego. We get attached. We want to be known for something. We want to be respected for something. We want to be someone in the world. And we're really nothing very much. And the only thing we can be is a devotee. Our constitutional nature is to be a devotee of Krishna. That's the only thing to be. But we don't want to be a devotee of Krishna. We want to be a pure devotee of Krishna. We want to be a well-known devotee of Krishna. And I'll tell you a story about myself. Again, the first time I went to Vrindavan, so many things happened during that trip. So many nice stories. I noticed as we went on parikram around Vrindavan that everyone was going to, the Brijbasis were going to certain trees and putting their hand against the tree, and they'd lean their head against the tree. And I didn't know what they were doing. So I asked someone, and they said, oh, these are kalpavriksha trees. And you lean your head and put your hand against the tree and you make a prayer to Krishna, a spiritual prayer, and he'll grant your prayer. So I thought, oh, this is great. So I went to every tree I could in every kunj and said my prayer. So my prayer was, dear Krishna, please help me become a renounced preacher. That's a good prayer, right? I thought it was a good prayer. I was very proud of my prayer. So I was going to become a renounced preacher. This is what I wanted to become. So every tree I'd go to, and then we were leaving. There was a bus outside Krishna Balaram Mandir, and there's this tree in the courtyard. And every morning I used to go and say the prayer to this tree. So we're all packing up and everything, and everyone was getting on the bus, and I thought, I'll just say one last prayer to that tree because it's very close. So I ran down to the tree, put my head against the tree, and I started to say, please, Lord Krishna, help me become. And the word renounced transformed in my mouth. And it wasn't renounced that came out. It was renowned. Dear Lord Krishna, help me become a renowned preacher. And as the word was coming out, I was thinking, no, that's not my prayer. But actually, I had to laugh because actually that was my prayer. If I wanted to become a preacher, I would have said, dear Lord Krishna, help me become a preacher. Straightforward. I wanted to become a renounced preacher. When you're a renounced preacher, what does that mean? That people know you're renounced. So people would see me pass by and go, that's the renounced preacher. So Krishna just exposed me perfectly. Just at the last minute, he just transformed the word in my mouth. What I wanted to say was, and we're doing that all the time, unfortunately, even as devotees. Pride is such a powerful thing. The desire to be distinct, the desire to be special, the desire to be respected, to be noble and known for that. Such a simple desire. You see it in every child, but it doesn't go away. It's always there. We see someone like Adolf Hitler. You've heard of Adolf Hitler, this German dictator? And, you know, he wanted to invade Poland. He wanted to become the big man. I want to invade Poland. That's like a child. I want the sweet. Give me the sweet. I want it. Give me it now. I want to invade Poland now. What's the difference? Again, we look at Adolf Hitler as an extreme example. But actually, it's not so extreme. We're no different than a child. We're just more sophisticated. We look at a child, we can learn a lot from children, how they express themselves, and actually learn and see the child in ourselves, expressing ourselves. Pride doesn't go away. It has to be extricated by a spiritual process. It has to evaporate naturally. But the only thing that will help it evaporate is reflection, honest reflection, to become actually humble, realizing our position. Our position is very simple. We're devotees of Krishna, but we don't act like that. We don't think like that. We don't practice that. Not all the time. We practice it at certain scheduled times. Mangal Arati. We'll be devotees of Mangal Arati. Guru Puja. I'm a devotee of Guru Puja. But then as we go on in Krishna consciousness, we realize even at Mangal Arati, we're standing there and someone starts to sing the Mangal Arati and we're thinking, oh, he shouldn't be singing. He hasn't got such a good voice. The Mridanga player, he's little. He's not very good. I would do better than that. So even in the spiritual atmosphere, even surrounded by devotees, even in front of the Lord himself, still the pride is there. It's powerful. A powerful force of nature. As long as we're attached to that pride, we're under the control of the modes of nature. Anything is possible. The modes can turn us like that in an instant. We can murder, we can abuse children, we can do the most horrible things because we're under the control of nature. We're not in control. And we're not under the control of Krishna. So we're in a precarious position. This Hiranyakashipu's position. So, I would humbly suggest that we're in trouble and we need help. It's like Alcoholics Anonymous. When someone's an alcoholic, too attached to drinking, and they want to reform, they go to this group called Alcoholics Anonymous. And the first thing you have to do is admit you're an alcoholic. So you stand up in front of everyone and you say, my name is Shanakarishi, I'm an alcoholic. Unless you can admit that in public, you're not beginning the reform process. We have to stand up and say, my name is, Shanakarishi. I'm proud, materially proud. I need help. We all have to declare it to each other and not keep it back. Keeping it back, that's where pride thrives. Keeping it secret. Having our little secret bag of desires. Someday I'll be famous. And then they'll all know. They'll all be sorry they didn't respect me more. So we have to become kind of egotists, anonymous, and follow the process of reform and be able to admit to ourselves and to everybody else. The beginning of the process is admitted to everyone else, and that will help kill the pride. And follow the simple Krishna conscious process. And then Krishna will be able to come into our heart and transform it and make it what it should be. So, there are some thoughts and considerations humbly offered, I hope. And we'll stop there. If there are any questions or comments or challenges or vicious assaults, Gauranga Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a wonderful class. You mentioned the example of the blade of grass, Trinada Pisunichina. So there was one question someone asked, that one aspect which makes the grass, the concept of humility, is anonymity or non-distinction. It is just one amongst so many grasses on the ground. And when we speak of impersonalism also, we speak of oneness or non-distinction. And when we speak of personalism, we speak of variety and distinction and being separate. So how do you reconcile both these things in terms of our philosophy? Like for a devotee to express himself individually in a distinct way, just by that, is there a danger of pride?
No. Not in the spiritual sense. There's only a danger of pride if we're proud. I can't reconcile the difference between oneness and distinction, because in philosophical terms, as we know, it's inconceivable. So I'm not going to try and, you know, make it conceivable because I don't understand it. But it is important for us to understand that our philosophy is achintya-bheda-bheda-tattva. It is oneness and difference. We shouldn't overemphasize the difference because there is the oneness also that we totally accept. But it's oneness and difference simultaneously. That's our philosophy. We often overemphasize the distinction. And every time someone mentions oneness, we go, and we, you know, like a vampire has entered the room. We have to be philosophically correct. But it's true that, yes, all blades of grass are the same. They look the same. But they're also distinct because they're all individual living entities. So, natuevaham jatunasam. Never was there a time when we did not exist. So we were never created. We're eternally existing. And we're eternally individual. And we're eternally servants of Krishna. So that our individuality is clear. We're always that. So we can't have a personal relationship with Krishna, heart to heart, as the Krishna book discusses, unless we can express our heart. And with pride we can't. We can't access our heart. So we can't express our individuality. That's our real difficulty. We can't have a personal relationship with Krishna from our heart. It's not bhakti. So it's so important for us to realize who we are in relation to Krishna. To understand what it means to be a servant. Personally, I find it a very difficult trial. But we have to commit ourselves to the journey. And commit ourselves to the difficulty, the realization of our weakness, you know, our precarious position in the world, very fragile. And understand that we are totally dependent on Krishna. We have to come to that point of realizing that and stop depending on ourselves. And then we're realizing our individuality. Otherwise, we're quite impersonal, thinking, I am this, I am this, I am so great, I am so fantastic, I am so such and such. And there's no basis to these claims. These are wishful hopes. We hope someone recognizes us as such. In the meantime, we'll make the claim, hoping that someone will agree. That's all we're doing. But Krishna has told us who we are, has told us what our value is, what our worth is. And unless we act as devotees of Krishna, as servants of Krishna, we can't have self-confidence. We can't have self-esteem. We can't have a feeling of self-worth. Because we won't be ourselves. And as long as we're not ourselves, we can't have these things. So people go to psychologists and psychiatrists to develop their self-esteem. But it's totally artificial. All they can do is suggest to you that you're not the worthless person you think you are, but you're someone else. But it's also another illusion. It's just transferring one identity for another stupid identity that still isn't you. The only position where we have strength is the position of our real individuality. And in that position, we can be ourselves. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna starts the Bhagavad Gita by discussing in the second chapter to Arjuna who he is. First point, who are you? He doesn't discuss him. He doesn't discuss God or the relationship with God or the nature of God. That all comes later. Arjuna can't begin to discuss or understand or conceive of God or the universe or his relationship with it unless he understands first who he is. That's the first point. Without understanding that point, we have no relationship with Krishna or anyone else that isn't based on illusion. So it's a very good point you bring up.
Since you have been involved with this Center for Hindu Studies in Oxford for many years, so could you give a history of how this developed and what kind of activities are going on in the center right now?
Okay, so that's the end of the class. The Center for Hindu Studies started 10 years ago in Oxford by Krishna's grace. It started at a conversation between a professor and myself, and he He was a very senior person in Oxford, and he suggested that there should be a center for Hindu studies in Oxford. And in England, people, especially at that level, they're very understated. They don't get to the point. They say something like, if a flood happens in your house and everything is destroyed, they'll say, "Oh, it's a difficult day." Everyone else freaks out in emotional turmoil and, "Oh my God, what will I do? My furniture is ruined. My life is, oh my God." So he just made that suggestion in passing in conversation. It was only afterwards that I realized that in his understated British way, he was actually inviting discussion about establishing a center. So we established a center, and it's been a unique journey for devotees. We don't consider ourselves Hindu necessarily, because we've just been discussing the nature of the self, and the self is not Hindu or male or female or any caste or etc. But if we look at our society, if we stand back and look at our society and our needs, we need good leadership for the future. First class people. I'm just quoting Prabhupada here. Prabhupada wanted devotees to preach in universities, specifically to attract intellectual class of men. He used to talk about the intellectual class of men. And he said, if these people don't become the leaders of our society, who's going to become? What's going to happen to our society? What kind of leadership will we have? Prabhupada wrote these books specifically, and he says specifically, for the intellectual class of men. Why did he write these books with Devanagari, Roman transliteration, synonyms, translation purports? A very scholarly presentation. He wrote them so that anyone can read them, but the intellectual class of men will appreciate them. And to this day, this is the only edition of Srimad Bhagavatam that scholars use, because it's got the Devanagari, the Roman transliteration, the synonyms, and the translation. There's no other edition of the Bhagavatam has this. So this is a very intelligent strategy. And Prabhupada was planning that intelligent people, the higher classes of people, understand, appreciate, and accept Krishna consciousness. So, what's the most famous university in the world? Oxford. People may or may not have heard of Harvard or Yale or Princeton or Tübingen or some other university, but everyone in the world has heard of Oxford. It's the benchmark of academic excellence. It's got a certain karma. It's 900 years old. It's got tremendous tradition. And this opportunity opened in Oxford. So I just stuck my foot in the door. That's my only credit in this affair. But this was definitely Krishna's plan. It just landed on my lap. It was like, bong. I was already busy doing service, and then all of a sudden this service. I would have personally chosen Cambridge because it's a more beautiful city. But Krishna's always got a better plan. So anyway, we started the center, and for the first time in history, I believe, devotees are getting an academically accredited education, getting Oxford degrees for studying Vaishnava theology. And we're developing a sangha of devotees. It's an intellectual hothouse of Vaishnavas. So people who are very qualified intellectually, now there's somewhere they can go to become trained up in the best university in the world and get a degree, which guarantees material success. They'll get a job anywhere. But also, in the mission of Krishna consciousness, they can use that degree to get a position as a professor and become an articulate spokesperson for Vaishnava tradition, so that we can begin to open up our tradition within the intellectual circles, so that people will begin to read and appreciate Prabhupada's books. So one of our graduates, Radhika Ramandas, I think, did he pass through here? 2 days back, okay. Radhika Raman was one of our first students, and very, very impressive devotee, very committed. He just published his first book. He's 24 years old. Academic book on Jiva Goswami. So that book is opening up the philosophy of Jiva Goswami to the academic world. Written in academic terms, in a language they can understand, so that they can approach it and appreciate it. Krishna Kshetra Prabhu just wrote a book about Vaishnava deity worship. This is a subject that has been ignored, avoided for 250 years. The British came to India and the Muslims first came to India and they destroyed the deities. Hindus immediately realized these Abrahamic people, they have a problem with deities. They don't appreciate this form of seva. And the British came and would come to a temple and ask, show me your idols. And the pujari would show the idols. The word idol, you have to understand, in Abrahamic tradition is a pejorative term. It's a term of abuse. If you call the murti an idol, you're saying this is not God, this is an idol. This is specifically something that isn't God. That's what you're admitting to. And because there hasn't been a discussion about this subject, theologically or philosophically, on any high level, intellectual level, it means that the Abrahamic traditions still have a real difficulty understanding what we're doing when we're worshipping the deity. They still have a real problem approaching that subject. And it's our responsibility to explain it to them. So we should explain it on the highest level. Because if we explain it on the highest level and Christian scholars understand, then they will write for their community. They'll begin to explain it and it will expand and expand. So the strategy behind Oxford has become clear to us as we've gone on. It's very simple. It was explained to me by a Jewish professor. Society is like a triangle. Imagine just a triangle. And he said, if you want to feed society, you have to start at the top. You have to pick your most intelligent people, your most religious people, and you give them attention. You give them facility. You nurture them. And from them, everything else will develop. They will think everything through on behalf of everybody else. They will train your teachers. Because the next thing you need to do is to train people. But who trains the teachers? It needs to be the pundits. The absolute experts, the most intellectual people, the most spiritually advanced people. That's where you put your energy. And all of society develops from there. It's based on respect towards this. Now, if you think about that, that's Varnashram. That's basic Vedic social philosophy. It's basic any social philosophy. It's common sense practically. So strategically, if ISKCON wants to mature and develop in the world, if it wants to integrate socially, if it wants people to understand it, it has to begin to develop socially. And this is how it will develop. So by Krishna opening up Oxford, this isn't the Bristol Center for Hindu Studies or the Vladivostok Center for Hindu Studies or the Kuala Lumpur Center for Hindu Studies. When you say it's the Oxford Center for Hindu Studies, it has authority. So the responsibility of the devotees serving there is to be authoritative, not to be sectarian, not to be political in any way, but to represent the traditions for what they actually say. So it means that they have to do that, and they do it in a sangha, so it makes them strong. So as I say, to my knowledge, it's the first time in history, not the first time that there has been an intellectual sangha, but an academically accredited intellectual sangha. So the Goswamis of Vrindavan, that was powerful intellectual sangha. Now we can begin to consciously, strategically develop such sanghas again. So that's what it's for. It's a facility, really, just for devotees. The most intelligent, send your intelligent people, get them trained up, and then they come back with an Oxford degree. Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. Why? Why did Lord Chaitanya take sannyas? Can anyone answer the question? For preaching, so that people would take him seriously. He was a grihastha. Everyone just treated him like a babu. Learned, yes, but so many grihasthas. He took sannyas specifically to have an authoritative platform people would listen. So now, in the 21st century, in Oxford, I take sannyas, I have a danda, I walk through the street, no one's going to listen. They just look at some crazy Buddhist guy. They don't know what it means. You know, in India, there's so many Babas, Gurus, Yogis walking all over the place. They're not all respected. Times have changed. It gives you some respect. People know that you're into something in a serious way. But you have a sannyasi, and you give him an Oxford degree, he has authority. Internationally recognized authority. The head of your Gurukul has an Oxford degree. People take it seriously. The teachers of your Gurukul have an Oxford degree. That's a serious institution. Everyone will want to send their child there. The essence of it is Krishna consciousness, not an Oxford degree. But if they can have that as well, why not? So, as usual, Krishna comes up with a brilliant plan. And if we start at the top and we nurture and put energy into these people, the intellectuals in our society, give them facility, I do think that our society will fill out very tremendously. Most of us are very glad to hear that someone's doing that, but we're not going to do it because we're not intelligent enough or we're too passionate. But it's very important for us to know that someone is doing that work. People are becoming, like this one very nice devotee there, Rembert Luterhams from Belgium, and he's a Kavya scholar, a Sanskrit poetry. And he composes poetry. It's a very difficult thing to do. Beautiful poetry. The last Nrisimhadev's appearance, he was reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, reading the story of Lord Nrisimhadev. He was translating from the Sanskrit. He was reading fluently. We all thought he was just reading the Prabhupada's translation. He was translating himself. The same as Prabhupada's translation. He was practicing. But that to read, to translate Bhagavatam Sanskrit fluently is very accomplished. It's very important that we know that we have devotees who can do those things. It's very important that we capture our tradition. We become the academic experts of our tradition. People say that we're a cult. Who says it? The experts. They. So if they become the experts of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, then they'll say we're sahajas. The former expert, he just passed away, Professor Dimmock of Chicago, his conclusion is that Lord Chaitanya is sahaja. That's the academic conclusion. Lord Chaitanya is a sahaja. So another scholar who met Prabhupada, Professor O'Connell, went to Chicago and gave a lecture and argued with him that no, Lord Chaitanya is not a sahaja. The fact is, we should be doing that. But we won't be accepted to give a lecture unless we have an academic degree. They won't allow us to lecture just because we're followers of Chaitanya. We have to take off the follower of Chaitanya hat and put on this academic broad vision. And we have to be able to quote from Sanskrit, quote from Bengali. Otherwise, we're not taken seriously. They can do that. We have to defend our own philosophy and promote our own philosophy. There are Radhakund Babaji's. For generations, they've been criticizing Bhaktivinod Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, and consequently, Prabhupada, consequently, ISKCON, consequently, all of you. And they're saying that this is Anapa Sampradaya, that they made changes in the Gaudiya tradition that are not authorized. So they're inspiring some of their people to become scholars. Their scholarship will try and prove that our society is Apa Sampradaya. They only have to prove that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is off in some way, and then we're all off. So who's going to win that race? Who's going to become the scholar first of the world expert on Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the world expert on Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, the world expert on Srila Prabhupada academically? Who's going to be taken seriously? Who's going to become the expert recognized internationally? It's very important that we become the experts. And to do it, our people have to become first-class scholars. No compromise. They have to have academic integrity that they learn in Oxford. So there's more to this than just social development. is also just capturing and protecting and consequently promoting our own society. So there you go. It is 5 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. We've gone over time. So thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki.